Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. As a nice lady said there, it is time for parenting. Once again, we're joined once again by Joanna Fortune. Joanna, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. What do you think of a seven-year-old not sitting next to their parents when it's bedtime and reading a book together? My daughter used to sit beside us on the bed to read stories together at bedtime. Now she wants us to read to her while she organises her dollhouse and dolls. She does seem to be listening, but something about this doesn't sit right with me. She has excellent vocabulary and is reading well, but shows no interest in reading or reading alone. And she says she doesn't really like books. I feel like I'm a radio in the background for her. She is rigid in her play and seems to like to organise things like her dolls just so. I'm wondering your opinion.
Okay, so I think there's a couple of things in this. I mean, you know, if I was just to take the first couple of lines of what you read there, my instinct would be, you know, her playing while you read doesn't actually mean she's not interested in the story or in being read to. In fact, we tend to see that pattern with, albeit younger children than her, but toddlers and into, you know, even up to 5 years old, children will frequently potter about while they're being read to. But what they're taking in from the story, they're putting out into their play. And you can see that often. So one of the ways you could do this is, you know, have some finger puppets that thematically fit with some of the characters or little doll figurines from her doll's house, you know, that fit with the characters or the nature of the story you're reading. And as you're reading, say to her, I know you love to play while I'm reading. Why don't you try to play out what I'm reading? See, can she integrate what you're saying very actively into her play? Equally, you could give her, you know, crayons, markers, paper, and see, does she want to draw out elements of the story that particularly resonate with her? I mean, what you can, talking to her, you know, like, I'm just thinking, for when a child says this piece that jumps out at me is she's good at reading, she doesn't actually like to do it, and she says, I don't like books. I immediately want to go, okay, well, how do we make reading more interesting? How do we bring it to life for her? And there is a technique, you can do it in therapy, but you certainly don't need to be a therapist to do it, called story sacks, where you would take a storybook and you would put that in. Now, when I say a story, you can buy very ready-made versions of these, but they're pricey enough. You can make them out of a pillowcase yourself at home. So take something like a pillowcase, put in the story, the book you're reading, put in something of the themes. Like, if I was to give you just an example now of Three Little Pigs, you might put in the Three Little Pigs. You might put in a book about buildings, you know, a nonfiction book. You might put in some finger puppets of pigs and the wolf. You might put in stones. You might put in twigs, things like that. You know, a plastic hammer, a little hard hat, props that support the story. And you actually tell the story together by doing it, as opposed to just reading it. And it can just help bring reading to life for children. I think as well, you know, making space for reading, and I mean that physically as much as emotionally or with time, make a little reading nook in her room or somewhere in the house, like a little fort. Be sure that you let her see you enjoy reading. And I don't just mean enjoy reading to her, that she sees you pick up a book yourself for pleasure. Offer audio books during the day, because if she is the type of child that's happy to listen and potter about, that could be really, really nice for her, and again support her interest in the stories. I would often, you know, let her choose the book so that it's particularly of interest to her, and just praise any effort that she would put into making that choice. Why that book? If you were the author, what would you change? And I think that's how you know she's listening to you, is after she's been playing and you've been reading, that you say, what was your favorite bit of the chapter we read tonight? If you were the author of this book, what would you change? Because at seven, she'd be able to do that. You could also, you know, read a book that has a movie version, but read the book first, then watch the movie together, and then talk about what was the same, what was different, what did she like best in the book versus the movie, and the movie versus the book. You can do lots of activities like that. I do pick up, though, that the piece for the parent is that something has changed. You know, she used to sit with us and we'd read together, because often the bedtime story is, you know, quite typically that nice time to do cuddle and connect just before bed. So something has changed. And that's the piece that's of interest to me. Like, what has changed for her? because sometimes when children have other things on their minds, when something is playing on, staying active and busy is a way of, you know, working that out and avoiding just sitting still, because that might be too difficult. It might be easier for her just, I like everything organized, and that's going to help me feel a bit better, because internally maybe I'm a bit disorganized. So externally, I seek to organize things that I can. So get a little bit curious about what's going on for her emotionally. It's a difficult time to be seven, you know, at the moment. She hasn't seen a lot of her friends in a long time. School, the structure, the predictability, all of that has been upended. So just get a bit curious about what might be going on for her emotionally, and might that explain what you're seeing. But in and of itself, I wouldn't, you know, over worry about a child playing while you read, and certainly still keep reading to her. Keep that up anyway.
So the not being interested in, it sounds like she's interested enough in stories, but not just physically sitting down and reading something. That mightn't necessarily be connected to the not wanting to sit beside them part.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's lots of ways you could have her sit beside you to do some nurture play at night, you know, after the story has finished, to have her lie down in bed and, you know, do a little cotton ball face massage by rubbing a cotton ball over her face. You could do a little top to toe good night, saying good night to all of her parts from her head to her toes and giving each part a little kiss as you do so. You can bring that connection and that physical proximity and closeness in other ways. And, you know, even if it was just someone who's listening thinking, but, you know, reading is so good for literacy, hold in mind that talking to our children, singing together, making up stories from our heads, they all help build literacy skills as well. So it's, and I mean, I'm far from anti-books. I love books and love reading. I think you can't start your kids reading early enough. But at the same time, there are many ways of achieving this. So if she loves stories but not reading, and some kids just find it hard to sit and concentrate on the book because their minds are busy and they're thinking of lots of things. So that's why I think she could play while listening to an audiobook. It's just helpful to kind of check in afterwards. What was your favorite bit? What bit would you like to change? Just to make sure it's not just background noise, that she is integrating the story and the themes that are inherent in it.
Mm-hmm. A couple of comments on that. My daughter is also seven and is terrible at reading. She's just not into it. We got audiobooks of the books we would have read. She seems to be engaging so much more. She has even drawn a few scenes from the books she's been listening to. Someone says, I just down tools if a story I was reading was not being given full attention. Though it does sound like she is giving it attention.
Oh, and I think, you know, full attention is a big expectation for children, because they tend to have so many things on their minds at once, and they're thinking of like loads of things that happen during the day, and things that you say in the book are going to trigger an associated thought. So even if they're paying mild to moderate attention, I would take that.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Now, my daughter and I moved in with my parents during lockdown, as I needed to take care of them, and they have a bigger house. It's been going okay in many ways, except for when it comes to my daughter. She's five, and it's always been me and her, as I'm a single mother. I'm finding it tricky because every order I give, she answers back. For example, when I tell her to go to bed, she tells me that Granny says I can stay up. When I say time for dinner, she says Granny says I don't have to eat it, and so on. Granny is letting her away with everything and all the work and routine I've worked hard on being broken down bit by bit. She's become so disagreeable. I've gritted my teeth up to this point, and now I can't get her to do anything. How do I regain control and get my daughter back into her... I don't know if this is parenting or reverse parenting, really, if the granny might be the problem.
It's actually intergenerational parenting, because that's actually exactly what I was thinking, that it might be granny who needs reminding of the boundaries more than the five-year-old. But tread carefully. I think, you know, we have to be very mindful that our cocooning aged population have had massive restrictions and massive loss of, you know, control externally in their lives, more than even the rest of us have. And as such, you know, it you want to tread carefully about how you bring up. I think you're blurring boundaries here, and I think actually you're overstepping the line. Be sensitive about that, but you do want to be firm about the boundaries. I think your daughter is getting a taste here at, oh, would you look at that, when there's more than just you and I can play you off somebody. Actually, there's something I can do here, a little bit of division, a little bit of, you know, divide and conquer going on. So when you talk about, you know, you're giving her orders and she's, you know, meeting you with opposition or defiance or playing you off granny, I think, you know, modify how you approach that. So rather than telling her what to do, present it in a different way. So you might use if and then. If you pick your toys up off the floor, then we get to go for a walk. if you leave your toys on the floor, then we have to stay in. And you come back a few minutes later and you repeat that exactly like you said it the first time. And on your third time coming back, if the toys are still on the floor, you simply say, thank you for letting me know that you don't want to go for a walk today. And then you have held your boundary, but she has made the choice of outcome. So when she's like, of course I want to go out, you know, please bring me out. You can say, oh, well, you made a choice. So do you want to make a different choice? If you pick up your toys, then we get to do that. So she can get to self-correct the behavior. But she's seeing very clearly that your boundaries are, you know, while they're gentle, they are firm and you are immovable on them. You probably do want to have a more direct, you know, line associated with that when she really pushes you, that you can say, again, just using gentle yet firm tones, I decide when bedtime is. I decide when we sit down to dinner. I decide whatever it might be. So you're not saying that's not Granny's place. You're simply saying, actually, this is my place and my role. So that all of that said, and I do think boundaries and limit setting are essential in this situation and in general. But we do have to hold in mind how stressful this has all been on our kids and is ongoing stressful for them at the moment. And their behavioral acting out, their pushing and testing of boundaries is understandable. You know, so it's not that they are setting out to drive us demented. They're not setting out to push buttons. That might be a secondary gain, but it's not their primary motivation. What they're trying to say is, actually, I have a sense of things being out of control, so I'm going to fight you for control everywhere I can. And, you know, I'm not saying that's pleasant, by the way, to parent through, but I think it is understandable at the moment, because for young children, they have so little control over areas of their lives that where they can exert control, they tend to do it full whammy. You know, they really go for it. And then when she's in bed, maybe you want to sit down and have that kind of same gentle yet firm cup of tea, slice of cake, chat with your mother about what would help you help your daughter. So, Mom, you can help me help her by doing this. Maybe you could just say to her, what did your mom say? You need to go back and run that by your mom. That would be really helpful. So if you approach it in a way that you're looking for help, rather than saying, here's the list of things you're doing wrong, Mum, I think you might get a better outcome.
Yeah, because it's obviously not helping if it's undermining everything if Granny's whispering in her ear.
Of course. You know, and the grandparent-grandchild relationship, you know, for most grandparents and grandchildren is a truly special one. And there is that kind of privilege of course, you can have the extra biscuit pet. And you know your mother would never have given it to you when she was parenting you, but she's not parenting your child. She's grandparenting your child. So that's why it comes back to boundaries. It's a very different relationship. And I really think it's a special one. It just needs boundaries.
Next question is this. I have a 12-year-old daughter who wants to babysit her brothers aged 8 and 4. I feel very nervous about it and don't think it's a good idea, but my husband says it might help her confidence. She's been asking us if she can babysit for at least the last 6 months. We did a little test run back in February and came home to our brothers in tears, but she insists they were just missing us and gave her another go. We haven't had the opportunity yet, obviously, but she's still asking and talking about it. My husband says we should go for little walks and leave her in charge. What is the norm for this? Is she too young to leave with them? I'm a bit too nervous, I think.
I'd be interested in what listeners think about this one as well, because there actually isn't, you know, a law or a set age for babysitting. It's very much a parental choice. And that being said, and just being honest, I personally think 12 is too young to be responsible for an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old and left alone in the house. I would tend to go, you know, as a generalized rule of thumb, more with 16 years old for babysitting and being responsible. And that sounds a bit prescriptive when we all know no two 16-year-olds are the same. Some 16-year-olds, you could be listening going, absolutely no way could I leave them in charge. And some people listening will say, my 14-year-old is well able, and that might be true. So I think we're talking developmental age more than chronological. My gut is telling you she's too young, and I kind of feel your gut is telling you the same thing. Instead, what I would want to know is, why babysit? Why does she particularly want to babysit? You know, what is that actually saying? Does she want to be more, you know, taking a more mature role in relation to her siblings? And, you know, if so, could she start by just reading to them? Could she take responsibility for that? Could she play with them? Could she come up and design a little play session? I'm going to play with them outside. Here's what we're going to do. I've designed a little assault course. I've used the, you know, pavement driveway chalk, and I've drawn out a little kind of jump, hop, skip, follow the line routine for them, that she could be responsible for that. She could be responsible for preparing snacks for the three of them. There's lots of ways that she could have increased responsibility in her relationship with her siblings. I would tend to hear this more as a desire for increased independence in general, because she's slap bang at that age, isn't she, coming out of that middle childhood on the cusp of early adolescence, when actually she does want and need increased independence from her parents and to feel more like a grown up. And if I can show you that I am capable of this, then you will actually treat me as less of a child and more of a grown up. I wonder if she's trying to differentiate. I'm so much bigger than my 8-year-old and 4-year-old sibling. You really need to relate to me more at a peer level than a parent-child level. So maybe afford her opportunities to practice that independence and responsibility, more chores around the house, more things that she can help with. Maybe she could go for, again, in the current times we live in, this all has to be kind of modified. But, you know, if she could walk to the local shop, if she's able to walk a little bit ahead of you, if she can hold the 4-year-old's hand when you're all going on a family walk and walk a bit ahead, you can do it in lots of ways. My gut would say don't do it with babysitting just yet, because anything can happen. You know, you could have the best kids in the world and something can kick off and she's 12 years old. My expectation of her coping in a crisis would be limited.
Yeah. Right, yeah, and as you say, it really depends on the child themselves.
Oh, absolutely, it does.
Age when they can or they can't. Right, we do have to take a break after that. We have a 9-year-old with a broken limb. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna Fortune is still with us, has dealt with three different questions so far. One was about babysitting, a couple have a 12-year-old who wants to babysit her younger siblings. Well, my daughter was 15, says this text, who let her mind her younger siblings, who were 11-year-old twins, and she did fine. My husband and I would go to the cinema and come back to a peaceful house. Another text that says that they'd say 16 would be the age to do it. They're more of an adult and a bit more responsible. You'd feel nothing but guilt if anything bad happened with a 12-year-old in charge. On the question of someone did text in to say that she's moved in with her mother and her 5-year-old. Maybe Granny is kind of undermining her authority a little bit. I bet Granny doesn't even know she's doing it, says this texter. Worth saying to her that you need her to back up your decisions rather than going against her. Maybe kind of Granny might be slightly enjoying that a bit. Right. Next question is this. My son broke his leg 2 weeks ago when he fell out of the treehouse out in the back garden. He's in a lot of pain and is going spare with the boredom. He is normally always on the go and imaginative, as he is the brother that keeps the others going in the house with games. But since he broke his leg, he is so down on himself. What can I do to keep him amused and keep him sane over the next few weeks until he's back to himself? Ah, the poor fella.
Yeah, the poor kid. And the weather's so gorgeous as well. You know, that's not the time to be breaking your leg. But that being said, there's actually no reason for a child in a cast, be that their arm or their leg, not to enjoy active play. I'm not saying that throw him back up in the treehouse, but in general, active play. Like, you could do things like you could play or have his siblings play with him, you know, catch. You could make up song lyrics and get instruments and have a little band rehearsal. You could do a game of sock basketball, you know, just give him rolled up pairs of socks, or better still, give the whole pile of them and he can match them up and roll them. And then you sit opposite and make a circle with your arms and see, can he get all of the socks through the hoop. You could take a sheet of newspaper, hold it out away from your body, have him punch through with his arm, do that a couple of times so that you end up out of a double sheet of newspaper with four separate pieces. He rolls those into four paper balls. And again, you could play basketball. So you could go a little distance from him. If he's well able for it, go a little further, stand up, sit down, move your basket, make it big, make it small. You could easily get a decent amount of playtime done with that. You could do some balloon punch bag, particularly if he's a bit frustrated and bored, you know, blow up a balloon, hold it away from your body, have him punch it, get him some juggling balls or juggling scarves, or, you know, just cut up bits of material yourself at home and they'll be fine, and let him work on that and learn a new skill of juggling while he's resting up his leg. You could do blanket play with everybody, you know, get a big blanket or, you know, double duvet sheet, which is be like a parachute, you know, throw it up and see, can you, you know, make the middle of it inflate while you all hold a bit of it. You could do hot potato, cold potato by putting a balloon or a ball, light ball in the middle. So hot potato, you have to you know, throw it up, cold potato, you just do it very slowly. You could call out everybody's name and work together to tip the balloon down to that person and back to the next person. There's endless play that you could do that would be active, imaginative, engaging, and keep him participating and playfully engaged. If he's having a little bit of downtime and just kind of the others are outside, or if you, you know, he could go outside on a chair, I'm sure. But, you know, if he does need to have a bit of TV time, turn it into a movie scavenger hunt. You know, give him a list of household items he has to tick off on a list as he finds them in the scenes of the movie or the program. Play the director's game, ask him what would he cut out, what would he put in, how would it change if he was changing the ending, if he changed a character. Have him really think about it that way with you. So there's tons and tons of play that you can do. But given he is a bit down and he has had, you know, really a physical injury, so, you know, that, you know, our muscle has memory and it may encode that kind of touch in recent times is quite painful for him. Mm. So you might want to do a bit of nurture play. And again, you could do cotton ball feather guessing. You have a cotton ball and a feather, get him to close his eyes and he guesses which one are you using. I mean, that shouldn't be hard, by the way. You're not trying to catch him out. It should be obvious. But he can close his eyes and relax and just feel those different textures. You could do feather blow it from your hand to his, cotton ball touch. You could do all kinds of nurture play. Do a bit of thumb wrestling with him. Put lotion on your hands while you do it. It's a tactile transfer of the lotion hand to hand. So give him some comic books, reading material, things like that, arts and crafts that invite a bit of quiet play as well. Because if he is a bit down and just feeling like, gosh, that was a really painful experience and that gave me a fright and I'm a little bit heightened and scared, some of that more nurture, quiet play, movie scavenger hunt, that might be necessary, and then build him up into the more active, engaged play. But there's tons you can do.
Yeah. Right. Next question is this. We're an Irish-German family and both my husband and I speak both languages to our two-year-old son. I don't know if we're doing him a disservice with this, as he seems to be having trouble picking up words at all. Maybe we are simply confusing him with the two languages. Are there ways to teach both languages to kids at such a young age? If it's going to cause a delay in speech, I'd rather stick to English, I think. Any thoughts?
Oh, gosh, I think there are, you know, lots of benefits to bilingualism and actually no consistent evidence that it itself causes any speech delay. But that being said, just as a monolingual child can have a speech delay, so can a bilingual child. So they may just be struggling a little bit with speech and it has nothing to do with being bilingual. Now, that being said, it's not unusual, especially in very young children, while they are acquiring both languages, to actually split the vocabulary they know across the languages. So they might know the word in German, but not necessarily know it in English and vice versa. And what we know, like from all of the research, and as kids grow and develop knowing more than one language, they tend to sort out the two languages as they grow up a bit. But if you do want to really work on this at the moment, one system you can do by choice would be one person, one language, so that one of you speaks English with him, one of you speaks German. The double benefit there is it also ensures that both languages are spoken equally rather than you doing mostly English with a bit of German. So there can be bits like that. He's still very young at 2 years old and very much developmentally, if it was one language, two, three, four languages, he's still acquiring speech. So his language is very much at a development stage in general. What you might be, I don't know if you've how two-year-old he is, but you've either just had or are coming up to your two-year-old developmental check with your public health nurse or area medical doctor, whichever it is in your area. And you, if not, you might be coming up to the three-year-old one. And what I'd say is, you know, certainly bring that up when you're at those checks. If you're very concerned, if you're thinking, no, this goes beyond what I'm explaining now, then do reach out to your health centre, your public health nurse, and see if you could get a referral to a speech and language therapist. It's very difficult for them to do an online assessment at the moment with a child that young, because it's just really difficult to get them to sit still in front of a screen and do what you're asking them to do. And so much of that assessment is play-based and person-to-person. But certainly maybe a conversation as parents with a speech and language therapist might give you some guidance that you could work on with him at home. So certainly you could do that.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million for talking to us today. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a commercial break. After that, Dominic Cummings' favourite castle.
Moncrief on News Talk
with the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.